I'll make a confession. I love Broadway shows and Broadway music. Some of you might. I like a lot of music from Andrew Lloyd Webber shows. I remember singing them when I was singing in choirs and such when I was growing up, especially from the 70s and 80s. One of Andrew Lloyd Webber's most famous shows is Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, which I suspect some of you have seen. And it tells the story of Joseph and his amazing coat of many colors. A song that's probably going through your heads right now and will likely be in your heads for the rest of the afternoon. You're welcome. Joseph's story is a powerful story of treachery and redemption, of forgiveness and reconciliation, and amazing turns of fortune where God's purposes once again are win out over seemingly insurmountable odds. We're continuing our sermon series on the story, the Bible as one continuous story of God and God's people. Last week we learned about how God continues the plan to redeem humanity from the effects of sin and death brought about by human disobedience and rebellion. To review briefly, God created the universe and created human beings in God's own image. Human beings were supposed to steward the creation and live in harmony together and rule everything in justice and righteousness as God intended. However, the first human beings chose to rebel against God. They disobeyed God's commands and fell into sin. And that sin affected the whole of creation, leading human beings to forget about God and live for themselves. But God still remained faithful to the plan to redeem humanity and restore them to their original calling in the Garden of Eden. God called a man Abraham, promising to make him the father of a great nation, whose descendants would be as numerous as the stars of the sky and the sands of the seashore. God would bless Abraham and his descendants and would use this nation to be a blessing to all nations on earth. And God continued to work through Abraham and his descendants and overcame numerous obstacles in his plan to redeem all humanity from its sinful state. And we see God continuing to work through that plan, through that family of promise of Abraham, through his descendant Joseph, who we'll look at today. Now, how did God use Joseph's life, who's part of the lower story of the Bible? Remember, the lower story is all the individual men and women who God uses to fulfill God's upper story, that overarching plan of salvation for humanity. We'll see what part Joseph played in that story and what his story means for us today. How can we play our part in God's story of redemption? How does Joseph inspire us to do that? We'll look at that today. So now the first question we need to ask is, who is this Joseph fellow? Now this is an important note. This is not the same Joseph who is Jesus' earthly father from the Nativity stories. That's a different Joseph. There's a lot of people with the same names in the Bible, and it's easy to kind of get them all confused. So we're going to get to that Joseph later on when we get to the New Testament. But this Joseph, the one mentioned here in Genesis, is one of Abraham's descendants. Abraham and Sarah, if you remember, had a son named Isaac, who married a woman named Rebekah, and gives birth to two sons, Esau and Jacob. Now Esau, the older son, was Isaac's favorite, but Jacob, the younger son, was Rebekah's favorite. And as you can imagine, this caused a lot of sibling rivalry. Jacob was also a slippery character. He tricked Esau into selling his birthright for a bowl of soup. And then later on, with mom's help, tricked his dad into giving him the family blessing, thus shutting out Esau and his family from their part of the inheritance, which should have been his right as a firstborn son. Well, you can imagine Esau was not happy with this and literally wanted to kill his brother Jacob, which seems like a normal reaction under the circumstances, so Jacob flees for his life. And the two brothers eventually reconcile, but that happens later on. And then Jacob went to live with his uncle Laban, who had two daughters, Rachel and Leah. Jacob really wanted to marry Rachel, who he loved. It was his favorite. But Jacob agreed to work for Laban for 7 years so he could marry Rachel. But Laban tricked him into marrying Leah, the other sister, first, and then made him work 7 more years to then marry Rachel. So now he's married to both Leah and Rachel. Now Leah had a number of sons, but Rachel was barren. And both women began this race to see who could give Jacob the most sons, even giving their servant girls to him to have children with them. By the time all was said and done, Jacob had 12 sons among 4 different women, one of whom was Joseph. Everybody get all that? Everybody with me so far? Okay. Now you might be thinking, wow, this family sounds like they should be on their own season of Real Housewives of Mesopotamia. This is supposed to be the family through whom all nations on earth will be blessed? This is the family of redemption? Yeesh. This is the family God chooses to accomplish God's upper story, God's ultimate plan. You think, wow, how's this all going to work out? Well, grab your popcorn because it gets even better. I'm kidding. We don't actually have popcorn. It'd make a mess, so we just, sorry. Our story picks up today in Genesis 37. Joseph, the firstborn son of Rachel, who is Jacob's favorite. Boy, favoritism sure runs in this family, doesn't it? He's the favorite, and Jacob even gives Joseph a fancy coat to wear. And you can imagine this did not go well among Joseph's other 11 brothers. Genesis 37, verse 4, when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all their brothers, they hated him, and they could not speak peaceably to him. And to add insult to injury, Joseph had been given this gift of prophetic dreaming and interpreting these dreams. And he has 2 different dreams, basically prophesying that Joseph, the youngest son, will eventually be lord over his brothers, and his brothers will come and bow down before him. Well, you can imagine when he shares these dreams with his brothers that they do not take the news particularly well. And the brothers became so jealous that they even plot to kill Joseph, but decide at the last minute to simply sell him into slavery. They sell Joseph to a caravan heading for Egypt, then lie to their father saying Joseph was killed by a wild animal, and even takes that beautiful, resplendent coat of many colors and dips it in animal blood to show their father, see, he's been torn apart by a wild animal, he is no more. And Joseph ends up in Egypt, serving in Potiphar's household, a high-ranking official in Pharaoh's army. The text tells us that God was with Joseph when he was in his captivity, and Joseph finds favor with his new master, Potiphar, and is put in charge of Potiphar's entire household. But Joseph also encounters unwanted sexual advances from Potiphar's wife. Joseph refuses her advances, and she ends up retaliating against him, accusing him of attacking her. And Joseph is then arrested and placed in Pharaoh's prison. Now, sidebar, let me talk a minute about what's going on in this story with Potiphar's wife. It's interesting when the text you pick months ago, not having any idea what's going on in the media or things happening in the real world, kind of collide with the text you're going to be preaching on, and it's always kind of interesting. It's an interesting week for this story to come up, so I did want to mention it. So here we have Joseph, who is essentially a victim of sexual harassment by Potiphar's wife, and then is falsely accused himself of attempted sexual assault and is punished, is put in jail for it. So with all the events in the news of this past week, as well as the general things we've been hearing in the news over the past several months about bullying in our schools and the Me Too movement and sexual abuse scandals in the church and in broader culture, I wanted to take a moment and just help us think about some of the issues that arise here. And obviously, I'm not going to be able to answer every question and resolve everything, but I'd be remiss if I didn't at least say something here. So I want to frame this by talking a little bit about something I do in the presbytery. One of my ways that I serve the presbytery is I facilitate a course called Healthy Boundaries, which is a course designed to help clergy and those in positions of authority, number one, recognize that they're in a position of authority, and number two, use the power of their authority for the benefit and well-being of those in their charge, of those under their care, and not exploit or abuse that power and authority. And we talk a lot about power differentials and abuse dynamics. And basically, to summarize, abuse occurs when those who are in a position of authority take advantage of those under their power for their own purposes. Abuse can take on many forms: emotional, psychological, financial, physical, and of course, sexual. Here in the story, we have an account of someone taking advantage of their position of power to exploit another person who does not have the power to resist or get out of the situation. And though the gender roles are reversed from what we normally think of in sexual harassment or abuse, we see the damaging effects of Potiphar's wife, who is in a position of great power and privilege, exploiting that power and privilege to take advantage of Joseph, who is in a vulnerable position. Remember, he's a slave here. And all that to say, as Christians, I believe our calling, general calling, is to support those who are vulnerable, who've been victims of abuse and exploitation, while holding those in positions of authority accountable for violating their power and exploiting others, and take whatever steps we can to prevent this from happening and make sure that people who've suffered from abuse can get the proper help and healing they need. Now, of course, we must take care to find out all the facts with every allegation and not jump to conclusions. And we've seen here Joseph being falsely accused. We certainly don't want that to happen. But regardless of our own personal political views or affiliation, we need to be there to support those who've experienced abuse or bullying or harassment, and not silence or shame or dismiss them. We want the church to be a safe place for people to find healing. And hopefully we can all work to create that. And on a pastoral note, if anyone has experienced bullying or abuse or harassment, and if maybe you've found some things happening over the current week or the past couple months have triggered things and you want a safe person to talk to or you want some resources to help, please see me and I'll be happy to do that. So, sidebar over, getting back to Joseph. So we have Joseph in prison, and the text tells us that God is with him again. We see that theme, God is with him. And through a series of providential events, Joseph ends up before Pharaoh himself interpreting Pharaoh's dreams. Joseph interprets that there will be 7 years of great bounty, followed by 7 years of extreme famine throughout all the surrounding lands. And Pharaoh listens to Joseph and puts him in charge of all the preparations. He's second in command under Pharaoh to plan for this coming disaster. And so under Joseph's leadership, Egypt prepares, stores up food, gets ready. And then just as predicted, the 7 years of famine hit after these 7 years of plenty. And Egypt is prepared because of Joseph and his dreams and also his administrative gifts preparing Egypt for this tragedy. And the famine is so widespread that it reaches Joseph and his family, his brothers and his father back at home. And they eventually, the brothers, come to Egypt so they can buy grain so their family won't starve. And ironically, they come and they bow down before their brother Joseph, who they'd sold into slavery years before. Awkward. And they bow down before Joseph, even though they don't recognize him at this time, and they beg for help. And at first, Joseph hides his true identity from them and his brothers and treats them harshly. But eventually, Joseph forgives his brothers for all the evil things they did to him, and they eventually reconcile. Joseph not only gave them food, he eventually sent for his father and their whole family to come and settle in Egypt in the fertile land of Goshen. Joseph saw how God had been with him throughout his life, throughout all the circumstances, the good ones and the bad. He got a glimpse of God's upper story of redemption in his own life and his family members. And in Genesis 50, 20 to 22, Joseph declares, "Even though you intended to do harm to me, God intended it for good, in order to preserve a numerous people as he is doing today. So have no fear, I myself will provide for you and your little ones." What his brother had intended for evil, God turned around for good in Joseph's life. and for all who were under his care. Now, this doesn't make what his brothers did okay. What his brothers did to him was horrible. However, not even the evil things people do to each other can overcome God's ultimate goodness and purposes. So Joseph's story, this lower story of the Bible, is part of God's upper story, the redemption of human beings from sin and the restoration of all creation to its ideal. Now, it seems strange to us, counterintuitive, even nonsensical, that God would use such a messed up group of people to be part of his plan of redemption. And we see the same thing in our world today. Just watch your favorite reality TV show, or scroll through social media, or watch the evening news, and you see things haven't changed a whole lot since the days of Joseph and his brothers. People today are still victims and perpetrators and enablers of selfishness and jealousy and deception and scheming and bullying and exploitation and abuse and violence. There seems to be no end to it. When we read God's story in the Bible, it's normal to stop and think, is this really the plan? These people are really messed up. Surely there's a better, more efficient way to redeem the world. In the book Slow Church by Christopher Smith and John Patterson, the authors discuss God's overarching plan of human redemption, highlighting patience as one of God's prominent characteristics. Patience having the sense of not just waiting for something, but long-suffering. And reading the Bible for any length of time, we see God's long-suffering relationship with the human beings he created. They write, God is transforming and reconciling the world. But unlike human revolutionaries who demand instant and total change, God is not impatient. The arc of the universe bends toward full reconciliation of all creation. But come, Lord Jesus, the arc is long. It took years for Joseph and his brothers to reconcile, and they had to work through a lot of baggage to get there. We shouldn't expect the reconciliation of the whole planet to happen in short order. God is not short on time, the authors observe. Our human nature says that our ideas about how things should be done are better than God's. We insist on taking care of ourselves first, either as individuals or as one ethnic group, one nationality, or some other subset of humanity, which ultimately leads to the dehumanization and oppression of those who aren't like us. But God chooses a better way. Ultimately, God sends Jesus the Son to earth as one of us to bring ultimate redemption. Instead of using violence to oppress others, Jesus chooses the cross, suffering and dying for humanity's sin, letting humanity do the worst to him, dying on the cross and then rising again, breaking the power of death and breaking this cycle, opening a new way of being in the world. Jesus embodies the reconciliation God intends for all of creation. And likewise, we as Jesus' followers, the church, we too are the embodiment of Jesus to those around us. As we follow Jesus, we become like Jesus. The authors note, gradually we learn to speak and act not out of fear and doubt, but out of trust in God's care for our fellow human beings. The church is not just to be a building, a place where people come once a week to receive spiritual goods and services. The authors say it's about cultivating together this resurrection life of Christ by deeply and selflessly loving our brothers and sisters, our neighbors, and even our enemies. As the people of God, we are the heart of God's mission for reconciling creation. And just like with Joseph and his brothers, it's messy, it's time-consuming, it ain't efficient, and it's often imperfect. But it's God's plan. And so, brothers and sisters, let us participate in this plan, God's plan, God's mission of reconciling all creation to himself, being patient with God and each other in the process, and showing the world a better way to live. May we live into this calling, and may God bless this message to our hearing.